You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey everybody, welcome to Reporting as Eligible. I am Paul Noonan of Acme Packing Company and the Shepherd Express, and we lost. We lost to the 49ers, who are very, very good, and it was so close, but you know, we're young and fun and we'll be back. But still, unfortunate. We'll talk about that. We'll break down what happened, how close we were, what's gonna happen now, all that good stuff. So to help me do that in Colorado, we have
What's happening, everybody? My name is Matt. You can call me Matub, Acme Packing Company Meme Weaver, and General Twitter Rabble Rouser. Look, man, when you said we're young, I was like, yeah, we're young and dumb and full of fun.
Yep, that's right. That is exactly correct. Oh, man, I watched this at a bar with friends, which is, you know, the best way to watch football, objectively speaking.
Of course.
And I really, really felt like they were going to win it until the missed field goal. As soon as they weren't up by 7 anymore, I was just like, this is good. This is going well. And then as soon as he trotted out there, I was like, I hate this. I wish they would have gone for a touchdown. And then when you missed it, I was 100% sure they were going to lose. I don't know. Same for you.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because the last divisional game, you and I both at halftime.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when the kick was walked,
we did that,
didn't
we?
We're like, they're going to lose now, huh? For me, for some reason, it was just like the start of the fourth quarter. I was like, they're going to lose.
Did you know that a Kyle Shanahan head coached team had never rallied from a 5-point or more fourth quarter deficit until this game?
I did know that.
That's
because
incredible.
It was on the broadcast.
That is ridiculous. That's stupid. This game is annoying. So I'm torn between, you know, this was a house money game. It's just that the 49ers gave them every chance to win it and they just didn't take it. And you know, part of that is inexperience. Like, experienced teams seize on those opportunities and realize the moment, and young teams do what the Packers did sometimes and freeze up a little bit and call a 2nd and 10 run when you could be going for a touchdown instead of a field goal and all that stuff. But still kind of annoying. I have mixed emotions about it.
I mean, my anger is mostly with LaFleur. That was maybe the worst called game he had all year.
Yeah, I guess maybe that's as good a place as any to start. It was not good, and I think one of the things that bugged me most about this game is they've been so good over the last, whatever, now, since week 9, by basically using all of their weapons a lot. And I feel like with healthy Christian Watson, who got taken off the injury report, and Romeo healthy, it really just kind of turned into the Watson and Romeo show. Snap counts kind of agree with that. With Musgrave, who was back running those stupid routes, it looked like an old game. And, you know, Watson wasn't all there. Didn't do jack in this game, except attract bad throws, I guess.
He had that one catch for 9 yards.
One catch for 9 yards. Interceptions were targeted at him. And, like, maybe Wicks was blanketed, but he only played 40% of snaps. He had 0 catches on 2 targets, one of which was kind of a desperation target. But, like, Bo Melton was in there for, like, 19% of snaps or some stupid low number. Had a huge pass interference penalty. It was legit. Like, you know, sometimes guys get pass interference penalties because Jordan underthrew it and it was trash. This was not that. This was a guy tackling him before the ball was there. And then catching a beautiful touchdown where he had, like, skillfully get his feet in and all that. And then no more targets. That's it. Bo Melton's done. Like, go, good job. Go hit the showers. Like, what is that? And Tucker Kraft did get targets, but the 49ers are awesome at covering tight ends. It's like one of their key strengths. That's what you may have noticed, people listening. Fred Warner out there. Not bad. Pretty good. Good guy to have. Good weapon. Very good at covering everyone that's not a wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, running a whole bunch of routes to Kraft and Musgrave, not the key to victory in this game. No, not a good idea. Yeah, Kraft had the one touchdown, but like, you should have stretched him out with receivers. We said it last week. I said it on the mini pod. They didn't do it. So I agree. Bad Mac game.
And Love kept throwing at their only good corner.
He did. What? Stupid Ward had like, who's the crappy corner? Aubrey Thomas, is that his name?
Yeah.
Something like that. That guy sucks. Every time they threw at him, it worked. Like, do it more.
Well, that was like, I think the first throw into the end zone was someone versus Ward. And I was like, what the heck? Like, why? Why throw at the one guy whose name you know?
I'm also going to check his name. JR, is it Aubrey Ward or is it some other thing?
Aubrey Ward? What are you talking about?
Who's the worst 49er cornerback?
Oh, no, that's it's Jimmy. It's not Ward. It's Aubrey Thomas.
Aubrey Thomas.
Right?
I can't believe I had the first name Ward's, right, not the last name.
Ward's
right?
The good one.
Because Tavarius Ward is the good one. That was my problem, yes.
Yeah, sorry. Jimmy Ward's a different guy entirely. Yeah. But yes, Aubrey Thomas is the one who was going to be set ablaze by 49ers fans for the majority of the game.
Right.
Until the 49ers won.
Yeah, when we stopped throwing at him for some reason.
Hi, guys.
Hey, welcome.
He's JR, but you can call him.
I missed you so much. I'm so happy.
We missed you too.
I'm seeing you guys again.
So happy to have you here. Also, nice job on Green 19, of course. We recommend it every week and listen to it every week because it's good.
Why, thank you.
Yeah.
It's real good.
Yes, it is. Phenomenal
job.
Yeah,
having a very good time. This has been a surreal couple weeks for me.
Yeah, you got to travel.
I did. I went to Dallas. I went to San Francisco. I went to the last Packers game at Lambeau. Worked all three games.
Nice.
Had a very good record. I mean, I was also helping with the Carolina-Minnesota stuff, even though I didn't go to those games. So I was pretty undefeated for a while there.
You were.
Until 106 to go. Again, in the last game, I was undefeated.
Oh, that game. Was it raining as hard as it looked like it was on TV?
So at points, yes. In the first half, it was raining wickedly hard, but it was completely comfortable in San Francisco. I don't know how to explain it, really. It was weird, but like, even getting rained on, it was not uncomfortable there. I had friends in the stands, and she was wearing a poncho, but she was like, it's totally fine. I feel great. And I'm sure that's just the Wisconsinite in me talking, but at no point during my 2 days in San Francisco was I uncomfortable, even when it was raining.
Nice. I do feel like it hurt Purdy, but I feel like it hurt Love too. That's why I wanted to ask, because if it was an extreme rain, I kind of get that. But there were a lot of ducks in this game. So it's just checking on that.
Yeah. I couldn't say for sure, but it definitely looked like Purdy couldn't handle the rain. And I thought Jordan Love was just playing like a kid in his first divisional title game. Like that felt more the case for him.
Yeah, yeah.
There was one guy who slipped. I don't remember when that was, but there was only one moment where I was like, oh, that was a rain play. I felt like for the most part they handled it.
Oh, there was Aaron Jones fell trying to cut on like an inside zone or duo. One of those two things.
Yeah. So that was one.
Yeah.
Anyway, we were just saying, we made it far. We're happy with the season, but we were so close to stealing this one, and it was disappointing, even though we probably shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes.
That's all.
That's obviously the fair
here we
point.
Go. JR, 90s album, Blind Melon, self-titled.
Oh, yes. Yes. Poor Shannon. Poor Shannon Hoon, destined forever to be a one-hit wonder when there was so much more going on there. But
indeed.
That's a good one. I haven't researched 90s albums. I have not prepared one bit. I just wanted to stop by and
we haven't
hello,
either.
Nothing else.
We have not prepared at all. The rundown is two sentences long. I completely ran out of time. So
let me tell you what I remember from the game. The Packers were the better team. That's the frustrating thing.
Yeah.
The San Francisco 49ers did not take a snap inside the Packers 30-yard line at any point until the final drive of the game. Both of their touchdowns came from far out. The safeties had everything to do with the things that went wrong in this game. If Darnell Savage doesn't play, it's probably the same stuff. But like, if they had ever gotten different safeties, they win this game. I don't really think the kicker is that big. It was a huge kick, and it changed.
It was
a
huge kick. It
was a huge one. But yeah, no, it definitely matters. I just think they had other there were other things that I think were bigger issues per se.
I've rewatched this. Quay Walker was a disaster in this game.
He was so bad.
He was very, very bad. He was in the wrong place a zillion times. It was not a good Quay game. It made me feel
even the pass rush had issues.
Yeah, it did
at times. Like they just didn't make plays. Like they legitimately, you know, the 49ers did make plays. They had the two long distance touchdowns, and even McCaffrey at the end, because, you know, I'm sure they could have let him. I'm sure there were people who thought they should just let him score at the end. But like, all they have to do is bottle that team up, like they had been doing all game long, and they couldn't do it in the one crucial moment. Yep. I know. I'm sure everyone thought they were going to score. I thought they were going to score. And leave no time on the clock.
I thought that too. But so the play he scored on was 3rd and 1. I was okay trying to stop him there. But
of course,
that was the last time I was okay trying to stop him.
And what else are they going to do in that situation but give the ball to Christian McCaffrey?
Exactly.
Brock Purdy has been bad all night long.
Make if they throw in that situation, it is a blessing, and you should thank your lucky stars they did.
Like, yeah.
Getting gashed there is inexcusable. So annoying.
So the brewery at which I was watching the game, that I watch all the games, is a YouTube TV NFL Sunday Ticket. Even though it was locally broadcast, they still use their Sunday Ticket thing. So it was like a minute and a half behind real life.
That's about so right. I'm on for YouTube.
So I'm on Twitter, and so when they scored, I knew, and I went and paid my tab. And then I came and sat back down. And
smart.
And so when Love threw the pick, I just got up and walked out, like silently walked away. And as my hand hit the handle on my car, I could hear the boos coming from inside.
Oh, that was such a bad throw. I know he's a kid, but the Brett Favre stuff is warranted there. It was 1st and 10. You're only down by 3. You don't even need to score a touchdown. You're not in that big a hurry. Just throw it away.
Well, RAE drinking game. Did you see the thing I tweeted about that?
No, did you tweet it? It was like a Favre thing, but he shouldn't go to
prison. Literally, I said, well, people wanted a quarterback who would throw more interceptions like Favre.
There were audible groans in the press box when he released that ball.
Oh,
Long before we knew where it was going. It was, I don't know how clear it was on TV, but it was clear as day when he let it go. Like, the only reason it doesn't get intercepted is if they drop the ball.
Yeah.
Like, there were two, obviously, you could see two guys there. So.
It was obviously a bad idea from the second he, like, kind of torqued his arm around that direction. Like, I don't know what he was looking at. I don't know what he thought he saw. Just ridiculous.
It's like one of those, like a pitch, where you see the pitcher go, like my spin rate was awful coming off the hand. And he's like sad about a home run before it even gets to the plate.
It was like that. And Jordan Love hadn't thrown any interceptions. I mean, obviously it's 2 in this game, but what was it? 1 in his last 8 or 9 games.
The first one was bad as well, but also a little unlucky that it got tipped up in the air by Kraft. It was not a good throw. It was behind him, but you know, whenever it gets tipped up in the air, it increases the chances of being intercepted by 1,000,000%. So
yeah, but I think if Kraft doesn't tip it, it still is like,
it's
rocketing
not,
towards
it's not great
who,
yeah
yeah
absolutely not great. And you know, the Packers had their chances at the same things. Darnell Savage got hit literally between the numbers by a Brock Purdy pass and didn't catch it, so what are you gonna do? That is why he sucks.
I said this on Green 19. I've never blamed a secondary guy for dropping a ball, because it's hard enough to catch a well-thrown football. It's really hard to catch it when you're not expecting it to be thrown to you. But throw in the inability to chase down George Kittle on a touchdown, the inability to wrap up Christian McCaffrey. I mean, that's just the worst possible game at the worst possible time.
It is.
You know, like he is, you can argue the difference in the game.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly one of
and
them.
Simone Biles' husband was out there just being old.
Man,
all over the place.
He tackled so bad. He looked like a kid.
And it's his thing, too. Like, he tackles. That's what he's there for.
It is. He looked like a little kid out there trying to tackle men, and it did not work at all. It was rough. And
we need to be really worried about the content, guys, because AJ Dillon ain't coming back.
He's not. He's
Jonathan
not
Owens.
Back.
The only thing I have with Jonathan Owens is that they have no other safeties coming back. They're all gone. So they might be able to get him cheaply and then like sign a guy, draft a couple. But
are
like,
we sure Dillon's not coming back?
In danger. I feel very confident.
Dillon's a free agent. I don't think he'll. I mean,
I don't know what his market is.
But that's not the Packers' problem. They're going to find someone else.
I know. I'm just thinking that, like, a guy who, quote unquote, knows the system for, like, league minimum.
I do wonder if they get to some agreement with Jones. I feel like there's at least a chance that happens. There'll be a lot of mutual interest in, for not that long. So it could that could happen. I'm optimistic about that one. He did not have a great game, by the way, other than that 53-yard run. Well, I mean, yes, that was great. That was a fantastic play. How it led to the missed field goal, right? That was that drive.
I believe so. Yeah,
but he was stuffed for 2 yards or less on half of his carries in this game. He was very, very boom or bust. He had a lot of 7, 8, and 9 yard carries and a lot of 2, 1, 0 and negative carries as well.
I mean, one of his 8 yard carries was literally a 3 yard loss that he turned into positive 8 yards. Like he had a lot of Barry Sanders-esque plays.
He did. He's still a good player. It's just it was a very unusual Aaron Jones game in that usually they're always in great down and distance situations because he says got such a high success rate. And that was not the case here. They had a lot of second longs because of him and the line. You know, Zach Tom has a lot to do with that too. And
yeah,
that's that. He also I think there was that 3rd-and-2 pass that Love put behind him, and I do think that was partially on Jones for not sitting down in a zone like he was supposed to. I don't think that throw was that bad. I think Jones moved when he wasn't supposed to move, and that would have also won the game probably had that not happened.
The Niners are fast as hell on defense.
They are.
Those linebackers show up. You don't even think about them, and then they're just there. So it's hard to move the football against that team.
It really is. Fred Warner moves like a non-human person.
He's electric.
I can't believe how fast he is for how big he is. Devondre Campbell like goes out there the next down, and it looks like he's running in sand. Like
that's a really good point.
Where
did Fred Warner get drafted? Is he like a third rounder? Like,
man,
is there a background on him on why he wasn't like one of the best linebackers in the draft at any point?
Is it just inside linebacker stuff? Is that maybe it?
I mean, he played for BYU.
Okay. Yeah, that makes it hard to judge you.
You would think he'd be look even faster on tape if he's playing at BYU.
Fair. drafted third round, so 70th overall in 2018. Anybody could have had him. Anybody at all. Just a really impressive player.
His team got smoked at the
Greenlaw
the
also
bowl.
Very good, by the way, just not quite as good as Warner, but man,
Greenlaw is very good too. Wikipedia deep dive here. Warner was raised in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Ooh. And after mentioning football ambitions to a fellow member of the organization who was a BYU alum, he helped get Warner's highlight reel to Kelly Papinga, who became his lead recruiter. Kelly Papinga, because I wanted to know this too, just what you're wondering right now, is the younger brother of linebacker Brady Papinga.
Okay.
Who, of course, also went to BYU.
Because of Brady Papinga. Is what you're saying.
By the way, other linebackers taken that year, Rokon Smith, Tremaine Edmonds, Leighton Vander Esch, and Shaq Leonard. Oh, and Harold Landry. Hmm. So, like,
That is a class.
Good class. Very good class.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's spectacular. Bosa isn't even, like, is he, like, the fourth best player on the defense now? I mean, he's fallen off a little bit.
Yeah,
but
I think so. He's still good, but he's not what makes it. He's not what the straw that stirs the drink.
Yeah, they got Chase Young just like hanging out. I mean, Chase Young is an athlete.
I'm sorry. I just thought of a really inappropriate joke.
Well, let's not say it because I don't want to edit. So they did not sack Jordan Love one time, but he seemed like he was going to get killed a whole bunch. And I think they started going short all the time because he was seeing pressure where it wasn't, which also kind of killed them. I want to cover the one line, one of the two lines in the rundown really quick. If the Packers would have won this game, the secret hero would have been Eric Wilson, who had the best fumble recovery I think I've ever seen in my life.
All time.
That was some Howard Green stuff right there. Some like, you're going to live forever now because they're going to go to the Super Bowl because of you.
It really was. Like, it was such a bad fumble. Everybody screamed in the bar all at the same, you know, one of those like, like kind of thing. And then he was just there and recovered it cleanly and no drama, no rolling around on the ground.
It like almost didn't even hit the ground. His dive was so perfect.
And everybody's asking me, like, who's Wilson? I was like, I think that's Eric.
Legitimately, in the press box, wrote the story with the headline, who is Eric Wilson? Because, of course, immediately, everyone on Earth, or at least everyone in Wisconsin, is searching, who is Eric Wilson? They're probably surprised to learn that he's been in the NFL since 2017 and has, you know, been around quite a bit and has been a special teams ace for a long time. But as soon as he made that, I mean, that was like, you just never see fumble recoveries at full speed like that. You've never seen them that crisp.
No.
The immediate
guy jumps for it. Maybe he makes contact and flies around to four other people before it's
immediate assumption for me was it's going to fly 20 more yards downfield with the speed he's running at and didn't. Mm-hmm. Good for him.
It's incredible.
Since I have both of you, I wanted to ask you, do you prefer a wide receiving core of Reed, Wicks and Melton or of Dobbs, Watson and Reed?
Reed, Wicks, Melton.
I don't even have to think about it.
Nothing
against Romeo because he did well in this game and was awesome last game. But Watson seems like a problem, and Melton seems like he's actually making plays when he's out there.
So the thing that we were all afraid of when they got Musgrave back is actually what happened.
It happened. Yes, Watson. It did. It did happen. But with
Christian Watson. Yes. It's like, oh, Christian Watson got back. Let's do dumb things with Christian Watson.
He played a lot and didn't do squat and looked slow and bad. So something to monitor.
Yeah, I thought they used him really well in Dallas where he was kind of a guy that drew a lot of attention, and San Francisco figured out they maybe didn't need to do that. So that was that's bad. Yeah, I don't I think he's an icing on the cake situation. Christian Watson is.
I think so too.
Like maybe he works out, but they don't need him really. And don't let his family hear me say that.
No, don't do that. You don't want that guy on you. Cheesehead TV employee Christian Watson's dad. Yeah, you don't want that. But I agree.
Oh,
with you
mean you mean Tim Watson, legal name Tim Watson.
Yeah, that guy.
Tim.
Yes.
He looks like the voice of, he does a bunch of voices on Futurama. He was on Mad TV.
Phil Lamar?
Yeah, Phil
Lamar.
He
does look like Phil Lamar. You're right.
He looks exactly
Phil Lamar's great. But I think you are correct that Watson should be icing on the cake. I hope the Packers realize it, though. Like, the other guys are better receivers than he is right now, at least. Maybe an offseason does him good, but... Yeah, I just want to.
But what's the risk here, though? Like, they're all under the same contract here, so like
my only complaint is I just hope they don't play the wrong ones. Well, that's all.
Do the Packers win this game with Jonathan Taylor?
No.
No.
No, they do. Do you know why?
Why? Because Watson's not there.
Because then Watson's not on the field.
Okay. Like the Hatterberg-Pena trade. Yes, fine. But like they didn't. It goes back to Matt. Did not call a good game. The weakness of the 49er defense is not their linebackers. It's not Ward. It is all the other cornerbacks, and you got Musgrave out there running those stupid slant flat routes, and you've got a lot of 12. So much 12 personnel in this game. Did not need to happen.
Was the entire first drive 12 personnel?
Yeah, and that I think that actually undid them a little bit because that drive was good. Aaron Jones was ripping off big runs. It worked really well. And then the 49ers adjusted, and they went heavy, and the Packers did not adjust back. So not great. Is what it is.
Yeah, Musgrave should be running nines if they're going to pass out of 12. Just send Musgrave deep. Put him on wind sprints.
Yep. All right. You want to talk about anything else in this game before we do questions? Hearing nothing.
Jones goes for 52 yards, man. I'm sure everyone was like this, but like, they're going to win. They've got it.
Until they kicked the field goal, I was like that. And then they did that.
Things gummed up there. Nobody wanted to hand it off to Carlson there, but 41 yards should be a chip shot.
He is. Even in the rain. After that miss, he is 50% on the year from 40 yards or further. And if you're wondering if the 50-yarders are skewing that, he is 50% on 40 to 49 yards. So they're not.
Yeah, isn't he? Doesn't he have a better percentage beyond 50?
I think he is.
No,
like,
it would also be 50.
I believe he has an odd number. Oh yeah, he has to be. Yes, he's. I think he's the same. I think he's like 2 or 4 or something like that, or I don't know, 4 or 8.
Yeah, I was thinking. I think he was like 3 or 4 for some reason.
He's some garbage. Why don't I just pull it up?
Very good from 39 in. I believe he's perfect outside of that.
Except for extra points.
Extra points. Yeah.
Right.
Outside of
which
extra points.
Five yes. of those.
So he is
something.
From 20 to 29, which are field goals you should never kick. He is 6 for 6. From 30 to 39, he is 14 for 14. From 40 to 49, he is 4 of 9 after the playoffs. And from 50 plus, he is 3 of 5. So he is better from 50 plus than he is from 40 to 49.
I keep thinking, should, I mean, obviously, in retrospect, you think they should have brought somebody in the last 6 weeks of the season. I'm sure they think that too. But it's not as if, I mean, you know, the response is going to be any, like, Bengtsson Crosby or anybody could have done that. But
no.
I don't know if there's somebody who could have kicked the ball into the end zone routinely or kicked the ball where he wants it. I mean, he's really good against Dallas at putting it down on the 1 yard line. And yep. the success they had in the kickoff game is one of the reasons Dallas never got going. Against San Francisco, just constant touchbacks, you know, like there's leg talent there. And I don't know if they could have gotten that element. And I would bet that they value that just as much as being somebody they can go to kick a 45-yard field goal, even if it's like a 50-50 proposition. They have to, I mean, obviously they have to do better than that. That it was not an acceptable season from their kicker, but I don't know how easy it was to just replace him down the
JR,
stretch. I don't know.
You brought up the, this is the first time that anyone I have heard mention the Bisaccia assistant head coaching like roster power that he has about the kicker instead of the safeties. Because it's like, oh, they have 12 safeties because they're all special teamers. And it's like, yeah, okay, Bisaccia likes the way he kicks kickoffs. So obviously he's going to stay on the team.
Yeah.
Like, that's a solid point.
It is.
Yeah.
He finished 26th out of 30 kickers that qualified this year in field goal percentage. So that it's a problem. And
also anyone who was like, oh, Mason Crosby makes that kick. And it's like, okay, well, the last time Mason Crosby had to kick one of those, it was like the Obama administration.
Yep.
Like,
yeah. That drive too, they got the 53 yards. Then they picked up a first down on that neutral zone infraction by Armstead. And then it was short pass to Tucker Kraft, 2nd and 10, Aaron Jones up the middle. That's when I started feeling bad. That stupid run killed me. So, yeah.
Wait, the neutral zone infraction, didn't like Zach Tom like boop him on the head?
I was in a bar. I have no idea. Maybe.
Like, because I remember like
Zach Tom was not playing at that point in the game.
Okay, I remember. I think it was the right tackle, like stood up and pointed and was like,
Was it Nyman? Was he picking fights?
Oh, might have been. No, Nyman. Yeah, might have been.
Because Tom was way out by that point.
Yeah, he was out by that point.
Are you guys familiar with Little Bunny Fufu?
Hopping through the forest? Foo-foo?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Picking up the field mice. You said bop him on the head or boop him on the head, and now that thing's in my head. I have no interest in singing it or talking about it. I just was curious if I was the only one who knew what that was.
All right, way off topic for no reason. Drink.
Yes, of course. So since I'm here, I guess I could read some questions.
That would be fantastic. I did not format them in a usable way, so you'll have to navigate.
No, it's a disaster.
Yeah. You can do it. You're a pro.
Hey, guys. All right, let's do this. It's been a while. I'm probably rusty. Mark Podskarby, Helen Thomas. Everyone wants to talk about how bad Carlson was this year, but was that truly the case? Crosby, for reference, had a worse field goal percentage in 5 of his first 6 seasons, as well as in 2017, 18, and 21. So is Carlson better than the narrative, or was Crosby worse than people remember? I believe that Matub would say, I was just going to say, volcano los dos. I was just going to say that.
You got to be quick. You got to be quick with me.
God damn.
I'm from Erie, PA.
I got, as Matub would say, I got that out, and then you perfectly timed that. Crosby was never made a Pro Bowl, right? Like,
yeah.
he was not a Pro Bowl kicker. He was a consistent, steady guy who had a disastrous season in 2018 and was fine after that, and certainly before that. But like, Crosby was just a really solid guy.
Yeah,
that's
he's like an average kicker, and he started his first 4 years of his career with a worse field goal percentage than Anders Carlson had this year. I'm not calling him Anders; he has to earn that. And But one of the things is, like, kicking has improved vastly in the NFL since Mason Crosby was a rookie, too. So he wasn't as comparatively bad against the rest of the league then as he would be now. And he also has improved as time has gone on. Not the last time he kicked. But so it's a little bit of both. Yeah, that's the answer. But it's a problem. Crosby's, you can do better.
What was Crosby's first disastrous? Like, when he missed...
Honestly,
he kind of
sucked. The 2012 was his worst season, where we were all like, cut the guy. He had 63.6% of his kicks. But like in 2009, he had 75% of his kicks, which is not great, you know?
but 2012 produced the single greatest football gif of all time.
Have
you guys seen it?
I'm sure.
Oh, so it was like Crosby missed like four kicks against the Lions in a row.
Yeah.
And a... like hurt and sidelined Greg Jennings comes over and tickles him. Have you guys not seen this?
I think I've seen it, but it's old.
Yeah, it's 2012.
Yeah.
Carlson probably. I do think there is a chance that Anders Carlson is the guy going forward. I do think there's a chance that he gets better and wins the job out of camp. I think the thing they'll lament is, you know, if he could become their kicker for the next 10 years. I do think that's possible. But I think if it isn't to that standard, if he isn't here for the next 5-6 years, they're always going to lament not having a veteran to take his place.
Yep.
Here.
Agreed.
2023. Tim Brown, because I do listen to this podcast when I'm not on it, and I greatly regret the constant inability to pronounce his name correct. Tim Brown. You never know if you'll get another chance, as nothing is guaranteed. But am I really supposed to be that upset that a super young team made some mistakes in a game they could have won?
Nah, you're not. It's hard in the moment, but and it's easy to second guess things like the game LaFleur called and the execution of guys like Love. But one of the reasons you lose that game is inexperience. It's hard to perform under pressure at the highest level of the sport. And they didn't, and that's not surprising because they're all 25-year-olds. So, no, it being not that upset is a rational way to behave. That's fine.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge... that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
I think, you know, going back to 2010, I don't remember that season the way I remember this one. I remember the 2010 team underachieving and being a team that should be in better position.
Agreed.
And then they got hot, and it was like, well, of course they got hot because they're really flipping good.
Yeah,
so
the 2010 team is this year's Bills. is kind of my comparison.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, that's a good
DVOA darlings that were losing for some reason.
Yeah.
Agreed. I do think, though, that this Packers team, the one you saw in San Francisco and Dallas and maybe even Chicago, the Lambeau against Chicago, like that team actually could win the Super Bowl or at the very least get to the Super Bowl. And you hate to see those opportunities missed because, like, legitimately next year, Jordan Love might get hurt.
Yeah.
Or the receivers get hurt. Like, that stuff. Yeah, I understand that. I mean, there should be disappointment because somehow that team was suddenly good enough.
Also, the 49ers are awesome, and you caught them on a bad day. Like, Debo Samuel got hurt. It was raining. Brock Purdy couldn't throw passes. Christian McCaffrey had 12 catches or 12 targets, caught 7 of them for 30 yards, which is trash for that guy. It was there for the taking, and next time it might not be. They might rattle off 50 points on you. They do that sometimes.
Good next year.
Did you guys watch the Lions game at all?
Oh, yeah, I watched the Lions game.
Oh, my God. I was watching that whole game just going, like, the Packers would have gone to the goddamn Super Bowl.
They absolutely would. They would have rolled either of those teams. I don't care if they lost to Tampa before. They would have won that game.
Well, and think about how healthy this Packers team got. You know, they didn't have Kingsley and Agbari and Rudy Ford. And then Bakhtiari, who they haven't had all year. Everybody else played, man. Yeah. Like, they were super, super healthy.
Although that's losing Tom was a big deal. But other than that.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, you're right.
Losing Tom was a big deal.
Everybody else has much larger complaints than that.
I would like to formally apologize to Justice for saying that we should have traded Josh when he did. We're like, no, we need a good backup tackle. And it's like, God, we should have traded Josh.
He was fine.
He was fine.
He was fine.
It's just fine. That Tom is their best offensive lineman.
Awesome.
You know, you can't. And how many times did you see Aaron Jones against Dallas run right, run right, run right? Mm-hmm. Runyon, shouts to you, and Sean Ryan, they did their job too. But, like, Zach Tom just killed people in that game.
He did.
So good.
Did you see, really, really quick,
since you brought up the Tampa-Detroit game, the end of that game is the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. Of anything in the universe, football or otherwise. I can't believe it happened. If you
follow politics, right?
Yeah, but people are trying to be stupid there. The Lions snapping the ball with 16 seconds left on the clock so that they can't run out the clock. And then Tampa not calling a timeout when they could have gotten the ball back with like 27 seconds left, possibly in pretty good field position. So it's just ridiculous that even happened. I would have been screaming bloody murder if I was a Buccaneers fan. Fortunately, there are no Buccaneers fans, so it's not a big problem.
Right, they all retired with Tom Brady.
Yeah.
But did you guys see Runyon during his locker cleanout?
Mm-hmm. Pretty emotional.
He said, like, I love it here. I hope I don't leave. It's like, man, I said a lot of mean things to him, but, like, now I want to sign him.
Who wouldn't want to be a part of what they got going on right now? The vibes are fantastic. Everybody's 23 and growing up together, and everyone's good.
Yeah. Also, he's a big body with T-Rex arms. Like, keep him a guard forever.
I'm
fine.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not coming back. They're not gonna do that. I could be wrong. I don't know, but I think Keyshawn Nixon is the only free agent that they really actually go and keep. Derek Kaur says, we 100% sure Joe Barry getting fired now? And if so, when?
No. He's not getting fired.
Oh, he is.
You think?
Well, no. We have confirmed that he has more contract left. And so he would have to be actually fired.
The one thing we did establish is it's not just renewing. His contract's not up. You got to fire him if you fire him. Do you think he's getting fired? I don't think he's getting fired.
Which means, I do.
When did they extend?
All right. It's a secret. They don't have to tell us.
So weird,
right? But I'm saying, like realistically, in his tenure, do you think they extended him like right before LaFleur got weird about defending him?
Who knows? There's no way to tell. It could have been any time. It would have made just as much sense at any time. I will say this for Joe: they should definitely fire him because we have a huge sample size of him sucking, and he doesn't adjust very quickly. But I do think he called actually a pretty good game against the 49ers, other than not stopping the run on the last stupid drive when it's all you had to do, again, not adjusting properly. But he had corners playing more aggressively, especially when Debo went out. There was a lot of chucking at the line and a lot of fairly risky cornerback play, especially given the safeties not being very good behind them. And it paid dividends for the most part. So I thought he called a non-terrible game in this game. And it was, you know, after a string of fairly non-terrible games. So good on you, Joe, of going out at least on a high note. But yeah, you knew there was a McCaffrey run coming, and you did nothing. So
congratulations on performing the bare minimum expected of an NFL defensive coordinator.
That is what he did.
Here's why I've been I'm just convinced that they're going to move on. One is they just have guys that are miscast, you know? Like, I don't even think this defense suits the guys that they have, and they need new guys anyway, but it doesn't it's just never felt like, well, A, it hasn't felt like that they've had the right defense, but then two, just so little creativity in putting guys in position, you know, to overcome their deficiencies, to figure out a way to keep the pressure on when Preston Smith is gassed at the end of the 49ers game because there's no Kingsley and Igbari. Smith did everything he could, but like, you've got to be the guy who can figure that out. You talk about it, he doesn't adjust to
he doesn't
that.
Figure anything out ever. That's his main weakness. Like, with a week with a week of prep time, he can sometimes put together the start of a good game plan, and then as soon as the offense adjusts, it's all garbage.
His only good game plan was against a quarterback who like probably plays as well as an everyman.
Yeah,
like in the Rams, where it's like, what if we just sold out to stop the run?
That guy can't throw. Let's just not guard the back half of the field. Yeah, that can't adjust to that.
He was asked a few weeks ago about Tampa Bay, why that was such a bad game. I think this was even maybe after Dallas. Like, he referred to it as just one bad game, just one off day, and that was like,
dude,
seriously,
come on, man.
That was the week after Tommy DeVito. That wasn't an off day. That was exactly what we were worried was going to happen.
Look, anybody
based
can have
on previous data.
Anybody can have a couple of 25th ranked defense seasons in a row, or eight of them.
It's possible that Matt LaFleur really said we have to up the pressure even after Carolina. You know, like, it's possible that Matt LaFleur was just like, forget it, we're not doing what we're doing anymore, or we're not going to the playoffs. So it could be the guy got desperate and started experimenting, but I don't think he's back. There's too many good options on the market
right
now.
Too many
with LaFleur connections.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think he's back. Evan, not Tex Weston. Did I miss anybody? No, I didn't.
Nope, you're good.
How did a noodle-armed fraud like Brock Purdy manage to hoodwink advanced metrics like EPA per play and DVOA so badly? Are the 49ers even good? Is it possible to evaluate individual play objectively in such a team context-dependent sport? My world is melting watching that guy toss duck after duck and then looking at his numbers.
He did.
And the rain thing is real.
The rain thing, first of all, the rain thing is absolutely real, and I'm bringing it up every single time in the future that it happens.
Just tiny bit. Did you see he was wiping his hand mid-play?
He was.
He would take his hand off the ball, wipe it on his jersey, and then throw the fence.
He was awful in this game, and there were several columns that were like, Brock Purdy proved he's one of the elites after that game. And then
there was one column.
It was. I'm glad it got ripped on a lot. It was beautiful. First of all, Evan, you're not new here, but the 49ers do this every year. Jimmy Garoppolo did this. He has been a top five / better than that quarterback when he's been in healthy and in the Shanahan offense. It's just how they work. It makes things very, very simple. You throw short passes, their tanks run far, and that makes your quarterbacking look better than it is. It's a very simple premise. And Brock is good at throwing short and quickly to people. So, JR, what's up?
The Brewers signed Rhys Hoskins.
Did they really?
They did, baby.
Oh, my God. That's so great.
I might have to go. I'm very
excited
about
this. That's fine. If you got to go, that's fine.
I don't really. I don't think I actually have to go.
Okay.
Yes, that's content. Oh, that's big. Oh, I'm sorry,
Paul. You need to clip this and put it on the Patreon because your face was
Here's one thing. So I do a baseball podcast too, as you all know, JR does too. And we predict, we get asked every week, like, who should the Brewers sign? Who are the Brewers going to sign? We're always wrong. Every single time we're wrong. But this time, like, there's only one logical person that they should have signed, and that is Rhys Hoskins. So every week it's like, well, they should sign Rhys Hoskins. They need an impact bat. They need a first baseman. He's the only one out there. They could probably afford him. They should do that. And they actually freaking did it. That's great.
What a day for Milwaukee sports.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
This is a banner day. Fantastic all around.
Also, what a day for Milwaukee everything. I had a job interview with a cheese culture plant outside of Milwaukee.
Hey, nice. So like, everything's coming up Milwaukee.
Are you moving to Milwaukee, Matub?
It's a hybrid role, but maybe.
Oh. Okay. that would be cool, I think. I'm not sure, actually. I need to think about it.
It was a town just east of Milwaukee. It has like two names.
You know that the towns just east of Milwaukee are underwater, right?
Hey, it's that's a great lake.
He's not wrong. It's,
or not east, west, just west of Milwaukee.
Yeah, I know. Oh, literally, east is a lake, so I knew you meant west, but that's funny. Yeah, Waukesha County, welcome aboard, sir.
Yeah,
that's exciting.
To finish off Evan real quick, Shanahan offense is just an offense that will make anybody look good as long as they're halfway accurate and have not the worst arm in the league. That's all you got to have. That's what Purdy has, and they'll be good as long as they still have Deebo, Ayuk, Kittle, and McCaffrey on the team. Any idiot can run that offense with how it's currently constructed. That's it.
Patrick Detmer, just want to thank you guys for helping us navigate yet another season. The highest compliment I can pay you is that I try to listen to way too many podcasts, and I've resorted to listening to them at 1.2x speed. RAE is the only podcast that I slow down and listen to at 1.0x speed.
I can
hear it as God intended. I'm thrilled that the number of weekly questions you get has exploded this year because it means more people are recognizing the great job you guys do. Thank you, Patrick Detmer.
Yes. Oh, man.
I don't listen to us. 1.5 for us and everyone else. My God.
Patrick, that's very nice of you. We really do appreciate it. Being a 1x speed podcast is a great honor.
That's a good thing,
I wouldn't
too.
Do
because
that for us.
I did my intro so fast last week.
You really did sound like the Micro Machines guy. I thought there might have been a lag catch up or something, but no, he was just talking fast.
When I listen to 1X, everybody just sounds drunk.
Yeah.
Because there's like slurring, speech. I'm like, I'm just so used to
it. You get
snap,
used to
snap,
it.
Snap.
Yep. Move. Pacing. Modern pacing. You sound like a 50s TV show.
We also have the rapport to not do the slow pauses.
I mean, I'm all ums and ahs, so.
I feel like I am too.
It's just part of the vernacular, as opposed to going like there's nothing drawn out. There's no pauses that are awkward.
Yeah.
I don't know. We dish out an awkward laugh here and there, I think. And that's very nice. Very kind of Patrick Detmer to say. Price Trozen. I don't really have a question. So all I'm right. going to retire my 90s album bit after today with this. My album for the end of the season is 69 Love Songs by the Magnetic Fields.
One of my personal favorites.
I find it fitting. The themes of the songs of the record suit Jordan Love, Jordan in parentheses, and the team to a T. Also, I think all the players are just about born in 1999 or later. Jordan Love is exciting, frustrating, gratifying, heartbreaking, inspiring, devastating, terrifying, but most of all, hopeful. And in the end, I believe someday love wins all. Have a great offseason, and I'll be back for the draft. Thanks for the great podcast, and of course... Then he has a green heart and a yellow heart.
Yep.
Two hearts.
Thank you, Price. And I think the podcast intro music last week or 2 weeks ago was Come Back to San Francisco by Magnetic Fields off of that album, which it often is when we play the 49ers because it's great. So appreciate
it. Have you updated the Spotify playlist recently?
I did it like 6 weeks ago, so it is a little out of date. But it will...
End of season update. Gotta do that.
We'll do it. It's like 250 songs long now. So
we've been doing this a while.
Yeah. It's good.
I was looking to see if there was an album in the 90s that had The Road on it since I was able to travel on The Road. But I think of The Long Road by Nickelback, but A, that sucks. And B, I think it's like 2003. So I'll have to keep looking. I'll find a 90s album. I'll find a 90s album to flaunt the fact that I actually got to travel to these two games. It's amazing, guys. It was amazing.
Okay. Bless the Broken Road by Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, covered by Marcus
Rascal
Hummin.
Flatts?
Rascal Flatts cover. Is like way later, but the original is from the 90s.
All right. Lucas Stoller, if the Packers already exceeded expectations and were playing with house money, how did that game still end up breaking my heart so badly?
Because they got close. It was the worst way to lose that game, I think, because it was close.
Yeah.
The defensive performance was good enough that they might consider keeping Barry. And it was hopeful. Like, they were so close. I'd rather, if I'm going to lose...
Won.
The best way I think to lose is a shootout, like the Arizona shootout. Like, then it's like offense is still kicking butt. You were close. Your good part played good. Your bad part played bad. The guy will get fired. But no, they gave you hope and they took it away. They were so close to winning this game. So close.
Yeah, they were the better team.
Yep.
And you get to that stage, like, it doesn't matter how much house money. You can talk yourself into believing that you're going to be fine with any outcome. You're not going to be fine.
You are not.
With any outcome. You know, you cheer for a team that was a six seed that won the Super Bowl, you know? So, of course, you're going to think there's a chance that you're going to win the Super Bowl. And there is youngest, a chance they could have won the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
and like youngest team to ever make the playoffs. The only 7 seed to win a game since the format was invented.
The only 7 seed. I love that. Oh, God. Yes. Yes, they moved to 1-5 or 1-6, whatever it is. All right, Donald Anderson, update. The Packers have gone 0 games since receiving a personal foul. I think they got 2 in this game. And with this, we retire the J.R. Radcliffe Memorial personal foul-o-meter. The end of an era. Speaking of end of eras, here's the question. Which player have we seen for the last time in a Packers uniform? Bakhtiari, Runyon, Savage, Devondre, and Dylan would seem like the starters who are locks to not be here next season, although Savage might make a case to stay. Conversely, I would hope they work out something to keep Aaron Jones. Do you see a world where any of these guys are back?
I think they'll make a strong play for Jones. I'll bet Savage is back because they have no safeties. Mm. Yeah, mm. I don't agree with that, but I bet he is. Just because.
How are they going to pay that man?
I don't think it'll cost very much.
Isn't it? Yeah, he's like, the rest
gonna,
of the league was.
Who's going to pay Darnell Savage?
Like, they were like, he's not even worth his fifth year option.
I think a former first-round pick who has been a starter who can go 4-3, I think is going to get paid.
Even if
the tape is lousy.
I will bet he's back, but I hope you're right.
He's
the
Forrest Gump out there, man.
Like, Bakhtiari, I think, will be gone one way or another. Runyon, I hope they bring back, but I'm not optimistic on. Campbell, nice job. Goodbye. See you later.
Hand him his ARP card on the way out the door.
And Dylan, Dylan kind of does, I think, depend on the market a little bit because they're not going to have any running backs. Like, they'll make a play for Jones, but there are none on the team. And he might be cheap. Like, he might be a cheap veteran option. So he may
Emmanuel Wilson?
Yeah. I mean,
he might be back.
He might, because why not?
Yeah. I mean, I feel very strongly that Jones will be back. I think that he'll be willing. There's just a lot. He's amazing, guys. He's amazing as a dude. He is the leader in that locker room. Yeah.
He is also
really valuable.
I know we say it a lot. He is much better than every other running back. He is the exception to the running back rule. They really are better with him than they are with anybody else they could possibly have.
Yeah. Jonathan Deal, the Packers are playing better than a postseason opponent and still losing seems to happen very often.
Yeah.
It was noted that they have 5 leads in 5 different playoff games in the final 5 minutes and still lost since 2000. This is over 2 decades, 3 different quarterbacks, and multiple head coaches. Bad luck isn't quantifiable, so what else can this be attributed to?
I mean,
it's bad luck.
It's mostly bad luck. I mean,
no, we've got to find some kind of curse.
I mean,
right?
Like, some of it is McCarthy conservatism, and some of it is this young team. This one, just you're young, you're inexperienced, and your coach was a little conservative trying to protect you. I think that, but it's mostly just bad luck. It happens. You know, that it is what it is. We have so many columns from so many people, Zach Cruz, other people, on all the things that had to go wrong for, like, the 2014 game. You know, that's just bad luck.
Oh, God.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
But
and
no,
I
what
think,
I'm saying
like,
is we got to find a curse, man. Like, so the curse of Kurt Warner was broken last year.
Yeah,
we got to find some 24-year curse that the Packers have to break.
You don't want to impose a curse on yourself. That's a
no, I'm saying there is a curse that we're not accounting for. We need to figure out what it is.
I think also it's easy to overlook. I mean, it's easy to make it seem like the Packers are special in this regard. And they are in that they always make the playoffs. Like, they have a very good track record. But, you know, look at what the Buffalo Bills have been through. I mean, they found so many interesting ways to lose. They lost. Obviously, you know what they did against the Chiefs. They lost to the Chiefs in overtime in that absolute zany thriller in 2021. They lost to the Chiefs by 2 touchdowns in 2020, so that doesn't really count. They lose in overtime to Houston in 2019. 10-3 to Jacksonville in 2017. 22-16 to Tennessee in 1999. Okay, there's like a 18-year gap between playoff appearances. I get that. But that's a cursed franchise. I mean, they went to 4 straight Super Bowls and didn't win any of them.
Yep, amazing.
That's a cursed franchise.
Such a good 30 for 30, though.
Four Falls of Buffalo. Incredible.
Four Falls of Buffalo is so good.
Incredible. Incredible stuff. All right. David says, was losing in a close game the worst case scenario, not only psychologically, but also in terms of our future prospects of competence at the defensive coordinator position? I believe that is just what Paul
said.
It
was. It was the worst case scenario. Hopefully they do the right thing, but didn't help. Did not help.
P. PJ Wessel says, thanks for another great season. Can't wait for draft time. Why did we see so little of Wixon Melton?
So snap count breakdown. Most of those snaps did go to Watson. The difference between Dallas and 49ers was pretty much that. There was also too much Josiah DeGuara, who got six snaps for some reason, which is he did get snaps against Dallas, but that he got snaps against Dallas in that little bit of garbage time when they brought in all the backups to play, and then they had to bring the starters back. Not like,
DeGuara had snaps on the opening drive.
Yes. So some of them went to Josiah DeGuara. Some of them went to Ben Sims. Again, not great.
Ben Sims had a catch.
He had a catch. But it was mostly Watson taking like the actual starter's role and running with it, which is my biggest complaint about the game. That's not how this is supposed to work. The tight ends shouldn't have had more work in this game. They should have had less. They 49ers are like, I think, third in DVOA against tight ends. No tight ends do anything against them. It was a stupid part of the game plan. Boo.
Yeah. Maybe LaFleur was just like, I got a Kyle Juszczyk too, and I want to show him off. Here's Josiah DeGuara. Just one last time. One last time. okay. Ted Korth says, not really a question relevant to the pack, thankfully, but who's the best college quarterback prospect based on Paul's magic metrics and the RAE hive mind? Ooh, we have a hive mind.
Paul's metrics are not done yet. They need to be adjusted for quality of defenses faced and quality of receivers. I will tell you, Jaden Daniels had like the best quarterback season of all time. He was the best passer and he rushed for 1,100 yards. So it's him, but there are problems with that guy. One of which is 2 years ago, he was sacked on 30% of his pressures, which is incredible. He did manage to get it down to 20% this year, but that's still high and worrying given what happened last year. it's him, and then I think Caleb is second in terms of draft-eligible guys. Penix is very high. He gets hurt all the time and probably won't go that high. May is down a little bit because he actually didn't have that good a completion percentage. So it gets a little tricky. I got to do adjustments. They will matter a lot this season. So I'll let you know later. But it's going to be Daniel statistically because he was phenomenal.
What if Michael Penix drops to 25 and Brian Gutekunst high on his own recent draft success? It's like, you know what? Let's.
I mean,
Michael Penix is already like 40 years old, and I don't think that would work.
We can already pretty much guarantee he'll be there.
I think he's going to fall pretty far.
I'm thinking third round, man.
His medicals are going to hurt.
Oh, really?
Him. Yeah.
Yeah, you're looking at a hooker, like a Hayden Hooker kind
of. I like Penix a lot, but a lot of people hate his short passing game, and a lot of people hate his medicals. The left-handed thing seems to drive some criticism that seems unwarranted, frankly. He's an old and. Some people think he has no arm strength, Justice being one of them. Some people think he has phenomenal arm strength, everybody on Twitter. I think he falls. I bet he's a third rounder.
I am looking at some mock drafts, and there is one that has him at number 8, and then the other two do not have him in the first round. Yeah. So controversial.
do you think that Jerry Rice has anything to do with the left-handed quarterback criticism?
Did he not remember, like Steve Young?
So when Steve Young was named the starter, Jerry made a big deal about getting opposite spin jug setups and like catching thousands of balls because the opposite spin made it difficult.
That's just Jerry being Jerry Rice. Like that's Michael Jordan stuff. Like,
no one remembers that.
Yeah.
I don't think that matters.
Well, I know, but I'm saying like that has not made it into the zeitgeist where it's like, oh, because Jerry Rice didn't like left quarterback, like it, who by the way helped him have a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. Like if the dude who has the greatest work ethic of all time says that like it takes work to catch from a left-handed quarterback, I wonder if that affects things.
Yeah. Jerry Rice fumbled. Romeo's Love Connection says, I know the mantra of RAE is running backs don't matter except when they do, specifically our beloved Aaron Jones. But even if the Packers manage to keep him in bubble wrap until late December again, they need to have a suitable replacement, right? Are there comps suggesting his limited workload will preserve him? Or should they go bananas on drafting Jones clones on day 3 or something else? I'm for Jones clones day 3.
I am also for Jones clones day 3. And you are correct. They need to plan for the future. Even if they do bring him back, he is going to be 30. He is very tiny for a between-the-tackles guy. And he's just not going to last that long. Like at some point, Jones will stop being Jones, and you need to have people behind him when that happens. And
also, they have to pay Jordan Love, so they can't pay Aaron Jones anymore.
Also, that
yeah, this was a perfect season for Jones, where the injuries or whatever it was that sidelined him early in the season allowed him to be at full strength. I mean, this is how great is this? 10 to 15 carries a game, doesn't play every game, yeah. And then suddenly the last four games of the season, boom, 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 boom.
He should make himself the Odell Beckham of running backs for the rest of his career. Just don't play the first like 10 games of the season. See who is in need of a running back late, and just
he's a mercenary.
He should just be a merc. Like it would work great.
So you guys are saying that, like, unironically, the thing that McCarthy said he was doing ended up working out. You guys remember, like,
not
like,
giving him carries? Yeah, yeah. I mean,
he literally said we're saving him for the playoffs.
I do. I do think that is warranted in retrospect. He's just not. You know, he's not a big bruiser. He would wear down. This is probably a smart way to handle his usage. I agree with that.
Yeah, so it's not that they're looking for, I mean, Jones clones, I guess, is a way to say it, but they may be trying to draft like their workhorse, even in the rookie season. You know, like it's a Jahmyr Gibbs, David Montgomery thing. Like, are they drafting a Gibbs or are they drafting the Montgomery, you know?
Yep.
Richard Proctor. That was one of that one was on me, everyone. Sorry. Every time I have texted my friend something to the effect of Jordan Love is so good, he makes an unbelievably poor thrower decision within an hour. It's like the Warner Brothers Dancing Frog cartoon. So going forward, I will not text anyone about how good Jordan Love is. This reminded me of that on the NFL Films commemorative documentary on the Packers 96 season VHS tape I wore out. This woman claims that the Packers' three losses that year all came when she failed to dress up her dog in his Packer gear. So my question is, what is the weirdest, best, craziest, otherwise notable sports Packers superstition you have heard?
I don't know that I've really heard any. We all have them, though. Here's one. Do you all have jerseys? You might not share, but do you have jerseys you protect from games that you think they'll lose? Because I do.
Yeah.
I had a Charles Woodson jersey and I lost it, and now I have my Tecmo jersey, which is still undefeated, and I didn't wear because I went to the bar, and it's a little weird, which is my fault also for losing that game.
I pulled out my Woodson jersey for the wild card round. I haven't worn it all year. I was like, all right, this is my playoff jersey. So I don't know if my Woodson jersey is now lost because they won. So I don't know. But I mean, You guys know I only have one like actual sports superstition, right?
Nope.
Oh, tell us all about it.
No, it's not even a big, like, I refuse to buy current player jerseys.
Oh yeah. I didn't know that was a superstition. I just thought that's just smart. Sound advice. Yeah.
No, but like, yeah, but like, because the because the moment that I buy that jersey, that person is going to suck, get traded, get arrested. You know,
or get involved in a Mississippi fraud scandal. You never know.
Yeah, or start a cult in rural Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Like, that's a jersey.
Tech leader.
That's a jersey I had to get rid of, you guys. I got burned on it.
Yep. Gotta get rid of that one. That one turned into a Halloween costume is what happened there.
Hey, you know what? Maybe I'll turn it into a Carl Brooks jersey.
Hold on. I'm mapping that out in my head to see if you can get the letters to work out. If you just black out different, there's so many letters there, but
There's a company that'll sell new nameplates that match your jersey.
Oh, really?
Oh, that's perfect.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Smart.
Let's see, where are we going here?
I believe we're on Rob Regis.
Rob Regis. I don't know a lot of superstitions to go back to that. Like, I don't have any, and I don't know people who do. I'm sure they're out there, and I just am missing them. Rob Regis asks, when will we know when Joe Barry is safe? That's going to be Monday, when LaFleur meets with Joe Barry. Presumably, there'll be something after that.
Can I go really quick back to the last question? Because I remember something ridiculous that existed for a moment. So, Bill Simmons, now a billionaire because he was a blogger for a little bit. It once wrote for ESPN's Page 2, which attempted to be a cool version of ESPN, but it had Skip Bayless on it, so it wasn't. And there were actually, at one point, animated Bill Simmons cartoons on Page 2. And there is one where he is watching the Red Sox play, of course he is, and they do start doing things good as he like gets up and is standing on one foot and bends over to get like a snack. And then the cartoonist is having to hold that position for the whole rest of the game. So, I just want to put out there into the world, there are Bill Simmons cartoons that exist in the world. Those are things that happened on ESPN.
How deeply upsetting.
Yes, it is.
Bill Simmons is a cartoon.
Sports fandom is so irrational as it is. I mean, it is irrational. It is crazy. We don't need to like sell the idea to people around us by only wearing the same socks or standing on one foot or whatever it is, only eating nachos during the first quarter. Like, it's already nuts. We're already nut jobs.
Yep. We don't need to add to it.
By the way, my vintage turtleneck is undefeated, and I've won a raffle prize every time I wore it to the brewery.
Nice work.
Sports are already ridiculous. Yeah. My turtleneck is super, super powered.
So, JR, also, it also looks awesome, JR. You've seen it.
It's good. I have no. I can't knock that one.
So, JR, you think we'll know Barry on Monday? Was that the answer to the question?
I do. Okay. I do. I think there'll be something. I mean, either there's going to be there could be no announcement as an indication that he's back, but I think we're going to have some clarity on Monday.
All right.
I want to be clear. I don't know if they're like, I have no inside information on this. I have no idea. I just feel like that's what's happening. You know, if they want to take a step forward, they got to get out of situation they're in.
They absolutely do.
Clarity on Monday sounds like a 90s jam.
Be like the Bucks.
Yes. Yes. Be like the Bucks. Get ahead of that. Well, they already missed that train. But like, the best opportunity to have done that was 5 minutes ago. The next best opportunity is right now. Mattingly Sideburns, thank you for a great season, boys. How much of an effect do you think Zach Tom's injury had on the floundering offense in the fourth quarter?
So much.
A lot.
Yeah, a lot. A ton. Yeah. They stopped going downfield, I think, because they felt like they couldn't buy enough time to do it. And the running game also suffered. So, yeah, it was huge.
Zach Tom is a boss. Yeah. What a boss. Watching him play is a joy. He is a joy.
Yeah,
great player.
On the short list for the best Packer of this season. Like,
yeah, absolutely. Keith Keskinen, Paul was critical of several game elements, specifically Matt LaFleur's game plan and usage of wide receivers. There was also a Dan Marino reference that I assume was about the bright future many, including myself, see for this team and roster.
Yes, that's what it was.
My question is, should I have been more upset about this loss given the great opportunity they had despite playing, at best, okay offensively? I'm looking forward to the draft and improvement during the offseason. Jordan, even with some head-scratching throws, looks poised to be one of the three best quarterbacks in the NFC. I think he's actually number one.
Yeah, I think so,
and the
too.
Packers should have a top five offense in the league next year. A change in DC, while unlikely, should occur, and competition at kicker should be brought in. Overall, very pleased with the season and looking forward to the future. Thank you, Keith, for all those thoughts. But
appreciate it.
And we did kind of talk about, should they be more upset? You know, yeah, they should be upset, but it was still a really good showing.
It was.
I was super upset day of, and then I woke up the next morning like believing the BS that I told myself before the game.
Yep. Yeah. I was kind of the same way. I was super hacked off in the moment, and I think justifiably so, but it's fine. Yeah.
But then you wake up the next morning, you're like, yeah, they're young.
They're young.
House money, blah, blah, blah.
Playoffs are hard, man. They are. It's not easy. There's only one team that wins the Super Bowl.
JD said there were a lot of if only this had happened in this game. What's the biggest if this happened, they win? For me, it's probably turning one of the early field goals into a touchdown or Savage holding onto that INT. Sub question, do you think Keyshawn Nixon is back?
Nixon, I think, is back.
I think so, too.
I do, too.
Yeah, I think he's back. I think if Aaron Jones sits down in that zone on 3rd-and-2 with 13:35 left in the fourth quarter and just catches that 2-yard pass that was directly to him, that they probably win the game.
I think Savage catches the INT. I don't think it was a walk-in. But
yeah,
there
were people
there.
I still think he might have housed it. He would have had to avoid.
I think he houses it. Yeah. He's fast. He's gonna house it.
He's fast,
and he was also moving when he caught it.
Yeah,
Just like Dallas. Just like Dallas. I do think that's the one, because not it's obviously the points, but also it takes away McCaffrey to some degree in a game where Brock Purdy can't hit the broadside of a barn. You know, so that really puts the 49ers behind the eight ball. And I don't know. I'd like to know also what happens if that intentional grounding call gets called with him out of the pocket.
Oh, he was just back 10 yards. He wasn't. Oh my God. I was so
mad. Yeah. It was a big mistake.
It was a big
mistake. Two plays later, they throw the touchdown to Kittle. That might happen anyway. That's a down the field play, but I would like to know what happens there, because that was not a hard call. That was an easy one. And, you know, at least the spots, the fourth down spots, you can argue is such an inexact science. I don't know where the science is that tells you that guy was outside the pocket.
Yeah.
Also, totally. Love got that. He absolutely got that.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yes,
but
me too.
I couldn't tell from where I was sitting or seeing. But John P., obviously a down lineman, says, This has been a nagging point for me. It seems like we're giving the defense a pass for the last drive by Purdy and the San Francisco offense. Was this another example of the conservative, leaky, Barry defense rearing its ugly head so that now Shanahan and San Francisco is 1-30 in games where they enter the fourth quarter behind 5 points per Schefter?
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
That's correct. Yeah. And we all knew it, right? Like, as soon as that happened, like, oh, we're up by four. Oh, this sucks. That's what that was. So, yeah.
Because the analytics say that four is a less safe lead than three, right?
That's right. They did exactly what we thought they would do. And they went back to their bread and butter, which is the worst thing to do against the 49ers, who all they want to do is throw in front of your defense and have those guys break tackles and run through people, and that's all they did. That's the entire thing. Brandon Ayuk 10 yards, Chris Conley for 17. Who the hell is Chris Conley? George Kittle for 8 yards, like just little tiny things, easy peasy, all the way down the field. Stupid garbage.
I will say this, the guy sitting next to me in the press box said, oh, now they're going to go 6 minutes, you know, use up the clock and score a touchdown. And of course I believed him. Of course I thought that was true.
Yeah.
I think the surprise was that there was 1 minute still on the clock when they scored. I will give the defense credit, though, that, again, before that drive, they hadn't even gotten inside the 30. That drive doesn't continue if Brandon Ayuk doesn't make an incredible catch. That was for once, Brock Purdy made the perfect throw, great coverage, and he makes that catch. So, like, the defense, on some level, still did their job in this game. But did I think they were going to score 100,000%? No doubt in my mind that it was a question of if time would be left on the clock.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Ziegler says the quality of the adjudication of this game seems to be getting much, much worse, which seems to be feeding the conspiracy theories about betting and predetermined outcomes. Everything seems to circulate around the difficulty in spotting balls, seeing penalties and so forth, being related to ref incompetence. Seeing as many of these problems are absolutely solvable issues, why is the league not solving this? Does this become damaging to the game at some point?
No. I mean, it doesn't matter how damaged the game is. Us idiots are still going to watch it.
It doesn't hurt ratings, like that's for sure.
The Chiefs game is the most watched playoff game in history. It was 50 million people watch that game.
And before that, they got people to actually sign up for Peacock.
They did.
Hey, I get Peacock for free with my cable subscription, so I have never complained about a Peacock game.
They don't want full-time refs. It's an expense they think they don't need. And they would rather have incompetence than corruption, as long as – and honestly, like, incompetence helps to shield you a little bit, too. And an NFL game is really hard to call. There's a lot to watch. There's a lot of subjective calls. Holding is just a thing that happens on every play. And it's only a problem when it starts affecting ratings, and it hasn't affected ratings. So, yeah.
Do you think that there's a bit of a, like, a baseball-esque thought process in not adding intelligence to the game? Like, not adding sensors to the ball for placement, or...
Could be. Like, kind of like that as a theory, actually.
Right, like, because you got to play with a wooden bat, like, because it's the same bat that they played with in 1897, and, like...
Yeah, I don't think it's a matter of bucking against tradition, because this game has completely morphed from the one that existed in 1936 or whatever, but I do think it's a process. It's a slow process to get these things implemented correctly. And I do think we're in this compromise phase where the video quality is so good that I'm not going where you think I am. Like, the fans see it so much better than the refs. You know, we get replay on half the plays.
Yeah.
And then the other half we don't, you know, and it's like, well, you can't slow down the game and have everything reviewed by replay, but it seems so frustrating to have that technology and not be able to apply it to every single situation, like spotting the ball every time. I mean, it seems like that would be an obvious fix, but you can't do that.
Yeah, that's
because
true.
Then it's a 7-hour game. So it's just this tough middle ground where we haven't figured out a way to speed that process along.
Yeah.
And I don't know how we would do it other than sensors in the ball.
Real quick, also, I don't want to ignore the elephant on Twitter today, which was Warren Sharp, who accused the NFL of malfeasance and rigging games by citing one referee who had a very lopsided home away record. I don't remember who it was. I don't care. And I think it was Timo Riske, I think, basically one of the PFF guys did. I think it was him. Basically broke it down, ran a bunch of simulations with the null hypothesis, and said, no, that record would be expected over the number of reffing games over the course of a season. And in fact, if that guy's record didn't exist, it would be more indicative that they were fixing games because they would all be too close to 50-50. So go check that out if you think Warren Sharp is correct.
You mean Tyler Brickner.
Yes, Tyler Brickner is Warren.
Tyler Brickner is a shyster and a charlatan.
Yes, that's correct.
And that man doesn't know anything about football and just has a large audience and says stupid things on Twitter to get clicks.
Yeah, that's right. So,
yeah,
Tyler Brickner.
We're just awash in conspiracies and all facets and think that the refs are fixing games. Like, friends, they're just
They have to fix the game so the colors match the logo.
Yes, well, words are spells. I love that one.
Hanlon's razor remains undefeated. So
unbelievable, by the way. Just incredible stuff. I mean, and he's going to run around saying he was right when the one seeds win this weekend, and it's Ravens 49ers. Yep. That crazy mofo is going to be so excited about how he landed on this incredible theory.
Neil deGrasse Tyson talked about how science was used in the discovery of the New World to act as a magician. I think he said it was Columbus who showed up and was like, give me some of your stores so I can make it back. And they're like, no. And he goes, well, then fine. I am going to turn the moon blood red with the power of my God if you don't give me here. Because he knew there was an eclipse coming because of science. And so then the natives all thought he was a god and gave him their stuff. And that's just like Aaron Rodgers is just using basic like logic to say the one seeds are going to match the
All right, we have more questions, so I'm going to try to get through them quickly. Danish Cheese said, so Aaron Jones seemed to be a huge addition to the offense when finally healthy. What would be your approach to spending draft and cap resources in 2024, combining the following elements? Number one, resigning Aaron Jones and letting him do his magic. Number two, drafting some running backs. Yep. How many? Which rounds? Number three, drafting offensive linemen to make less than stellar RBs also have a chance at success. Number four, anything else? They're going to have to sign Aaron Jones for less money, but he's already taken a cut once, and it seems like that's possible that he can do it again. And then, they'll draft a backup running back, and their first-round pick should be an offensive lineman. So it's, to me, kind of simple.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I would take at least one running back. I'd probably take two. I would try and get a more every-downy Dylan-type guy, and I'd try and get a pass-catcher-type guy. And I don't take running backs before the fourth, that's even kind of hurting me a little bit to do that, but that's where I do that.
Yeah, Paul's over here like, why don't you just draft Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams again?
Yes, correct. That's fine. That works great. Look what happened last time. It worked great. Do it again.
Hey, do you guys remember the last O-line that we took in the first round?
This guy that broke his leg.
Was it John Michaels?
I thought it was Blaga.
Derek Sherrod?
Derek Sherrod is who I was trying to think of.
Was Sherrod after Blaga?
Derek Sherrod's 2011. That's a long
Blaga
time
Blaga was 10, I think.
I thought Blaga was after that. No, Balaga's a rookie in the Super Bowl, so that would be correct. He is 2010. Uh-huh. Balaga's a rookie in the Super Bowl. Well done.
Ryan Balaga. I just wanted to say that.
So is it Derek Sherrod? Have they really not taken a – I guess not.
I believe that's the last first round.
I think it's Derek Sherrod.
Also, I've always said Sherrod.
I've never heard
his
name.
That's weird. That's extremely weird of you.
Derek Sherrod?
K-7, it seems like proven kickers are at a premium for once. However, it feels like we could trade a 6th or 7th with a newfound urgency to build a championship roster. Doing so would require the following assumptions. Goody would resist a low pick, imagining a Lou Nichols rather than a Carrington Valentine. We could take a relatively small cap hit for the vet kicker, which we probably cannot. Kickers might make a difference in an elimination game, maybe. Management would cut Anders, which they won't. No. The question is, with a new window opening, should the Packers trade bottom-of-the-barrel picks for more proven guys like the special team support roles? We could still be a draft and develop operation with big-time picks. The best kickers in football were all undrafted or taken off practice squads.
That's right. That's correct.
Justin Tucker was undrafted.
Never draft a kicker.
Correct. So was Cairo Santos.
The freaking Cowboys kicker was just a soccer player whose wife said that he could do better than the kickers that existed in the league.
Totally.
And then he did. So, like, you can – I always say on this podcast, kicking is not as hard as it's made out to be. They should raid more soccer leagues for that kind of guy. Mm-hmm. It's there are a lot of them out there. You can teach them how to do it.
Kickers are just sociopaths with good muscle memory.
That's right. That is correct.
Dutch Boy 5, well, it was quite the ride. It was quite a ride, this news on. Am I reading that wrong?
No, he wrote it wrong.
Oh, okay. Well, it was quite a ride. Ups and downs and hope and disappointment. First, let me say I love the show, and it always is a good part of the season, no matter the play. But I think back to my preseason hopes for this team. Exceeded expectations on most of them. Best one that hit was obviously Jordan Love. Worst miss is I think we have another year of Joe Barry. What say you? Besides Love and Barry, what are the best hit and worst miss of this team from your preseason hopes?
I literally predicted the record.
Well done.
Playoff nice earth. Work.
Do you guys remember that?
I said
that at best, this is a 6-win team with a 9-win schedule.
Okay. Yeah.
And then I said they would go on a tear after the Chiefs game. That was a little off.
My best call is Dontayvion Wicks, who is actually good and who I said would be really, really good. And he is. So my best non-Packer is CJ Stroud, who I said was the best quarterback in that draft by far. And he definitely is. So those are good.
He definitely outplayed Joe Flacco.
Yeah. Misses. Yes, he did. I know I had misses, but Reed's my worst miss. People will bring that up if I don't. So easy.
Do people still yell at you on Twitter about that?
Yeah. Which is fine. I was wrong. So whatever. There you go.
You had me believing too midway through the year that Jordan Love was 100% not it. I believe that full-throatedly.
I also believe that full-throatedly. I've never seen an in-season turnaround like that. So. It's kind of unprecedented. Has it ever happened before?
after week 8, he went to the Josh Allen School of Driveline. And then...
Oh, yeah. Just a wild, incredible turn of events. And yeah, he is the best quarterback in the NFC. Now, that's unfair probably to Jalen Hurts or even Jared
I think it's unfair to Dak.
Maybe.
Who we saw suck against us, but I think was the best quarterback in the NFC by pretty large margin this year and has been in the past. Like Dak's pretty good, but again, your point is a good point. Dak's not that good. If he was in the AFC, he'd be like the seventh best quarterback.
Right. Dak is firmly in that like Phillip Rivers, like will win you games, but is not ever going to be the top three of the league.
Yeah.
I think that's a little harsh on Phillip actually, but yeah, I got your point. Rivers was
okay,
good.
Yeah. Also, Phil, Rivers played for a tire fire of a franchise.
Yeah, he did.
You're right there.
I'm waiting for a reference to the number of children that he has, Matub. Felt like that was where you were going to go.
He currently has more than Cromartie.
He has more than the number of questions we have to go still. Let's
get
this puppy rolling.
Mark Hackett, I insist that Paul read this in the thickest tippery tongue that he can muster. I know he wants to, and Matub's effort last week was abysmal. I have so many questions and was mulling over what to ask you, and then I saw JR's tweet about the 49ers snaps in the red zone. Does that stat prove the folly of bend but don't break mentality?
should I do my Irish brogue for the addendum?
Let's go.
Addendum. Just want to reiterate that the others have said above, and thank you for all the hard work during the season. I stumbled across this podcast accidentally, but I'm so happy that I did. I have followed the Packers from afar for a long time now, but never fully understood the intricacies of the game. You have taught me plenty, and all the while it has been fun. I'm working my way through Take Your Eye Off the Ball after it was recommended on an episode, and that too have opened my eyes. Thank you.
Oh my God, that's the best Liverpool accent I've ever heard.
Oh my God.
You sound like Patty the Batty Pimblett.
That was tough.
He insisted.
That was tough.
I wouldn't have done it voluntarily.
Scouser.
I think it does prove the folly of the bend but don't break.
You'll bend and then you'll break.
The thing about the bend but don't break is it's not like a strategy. It's just a function of how the size of the field works. It's easier to defend smaller fields.
If you have terrible safeties, then you use the end zone as your safe.
There's a Futurama, the first one with Zap Brannigan. If you watch it, you'll know who that is. If you don't, I'll get to it. Who's an incompetent military leader. And he received one of his military stars for defeating the Killbot army. And the way he defeated the Killbot army is by realizing that the Killbots all have a set amount of people they can kill before their memory gets clogged up and they deactivate. And so he just sent that number of people at them until they had finished killing all of them and couldn't operate anymore. And but I feel like
the,
that's what the bend but
description
don't break
is the best part. He's like, I sent wave after wave of my own men.
Until the kill bots ran out of killing space and couldn't kill anymore. That's the bend but don't break defense. It's just not doing anything and the space compresses and then you get better at defense because the space compresses. All right.
Rush the passer.
Yes, do that.
Blitz.
Create pressure.
Old man on a bike in Sterlington. Old man on a bike. I'm just an old man on a bike, but I know what it means to compete, though most of the bicyclists I'm competing against on the pedestrian path have no idea I'm competing against them. In this regard, I don't think this season could have gone a whole lot better for the Packers and the potential to compete for multiple Super Bowls. We seemingly found our quarterback, four or five solid wide receivers, two tight ends, and shipped a lunatic to the Jets. Meanwhile, the Bears continue to suck and the Vikings don't have a quarterback. These are all good things, and I can't wait for next season. My question is, what are you most looking forward to next season? I'm personally looking forward to Love winning MVP, the Packers winning a Super Bowl, and gloating to all my coworkers and neighbors.
Yeah, those are all good. I like that. I look forward to the ascension of a shakeup in the receivers or one of them taking a step forward. Like if Watson gets back to normal, great. But I want to see Wicks like go out and grab that sucker and become a starter on the outside. That's what I want to see next year. But like just the offense fully formed for a whole season, running smoothly with a lot of confidence and another year of experience. They should be dynamite. Like this should be like an obviously awesome playoff team from the get-go. That's what I want to see.
I am so looking forward to Bo Melton being our Tyler Lockett.
Yeah.
Where, like, he's going to be sneaky good, and then, like, next year someone's going to write an article like, Bo Melton?
Yeah. I mean, like a low-volume super DVOA guy. That'll be me writing that article. That's what I pay attention to. So those are my guys.
You can't write that article because you killed Alan Lazard. No, you killed Alan Lazard.
Oh, I did by writing that he was good. Yeah,
you wrote that he's a DVOA darling, and then he tore a core muscle the next week.
I am very powerful.
The good news is, even if Bo Melton doesn't work out, they got five other guys. So
yep. All right, we're almost there, guys. Let's bring this puppy home.
Matt Pickett says the NFL can't be rigged, right? Very few players would consider throwing games, right? But when so many competitive games hinge on just one or two plays, a well-timed bad ref call could be enough to actually determine the outcome. With Vegas and the NFL being very cozy these days on a scale of 1 to 10, where 10 is there's microchips in the Pfizer vaccine, how crazy is this concept?
It's pretty crazy. I would give it like a 10 crazy. Here's why. We, as observers of these games, actually can kind of tell if there are shenanigans going on. Like, you see a bad call, you want to blame it on the refs. You want to maybe blame it on conspiracies about the refs hating your team. That's fine. But if a referee was rigging games, you would probably be able to tell pretty quickly that it was going on. It would show up as huge a huge outlier. There would be a bunch of really bad calls. Honestly, from a game-to-game basis, there's usually not a huge amount of very obvious overturns that you would need to actually be able to rig a game. Like, measurements are, you know, hard to get. Like, they're very inexact. It's not great. But, you know, it comes down to an inch one side or the other. It's random. It's not rigging it. To actually do it, you'd have to have some ridiculous calls. We would know about it.
So the way I like to look at it is, when you look at other sports with betting scandals, what happens? Like, when you hear a betting scandal in basketball, it's point shaving.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's the issue. When you hear of a betting scandal in the NFL, it's guys betting on themselves to do well. Paul Hornung bet on the Packers to win. He bet on himself to break his yardage overs.
And, like, the other thing is the refs are one thing. Players, like, an offensive lineman's not going to throw a game because his quarterback will tell on him. And there's also accountability from other people on the field. You know, if there's obvious cheating going on, players are going to notice too. There's lots of people that need to be in on this conspiracy, and you're probably not going to get all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if the quarterback is the one who cheats, he's going to end up having to play football with a bunch of prisoners and play against the guards, and Adam Sandler's going to show up. It's not going to be good.
Yeah, it's ugly.
Really bad. Scarf21, now that we're officially in draft season, who are some of your preliminary draft crushes? It feels strange going from looking up top 10 draft picks to thinking about who may drop all the way to 25.
Oh, I haven't looked at draft yet.
I haven't looked at the draft outside of the quarterbacks back when we were like...
Here's what I'll say, because I'm a content-first guy. The right tackle from Alabama is J.C. Latham. Probably will not fall to the Packers. He's a top 15 talent, but he went to Catholic Memorial High School in Waukesha. He ended up transferring, I believe, to Florida for the end of his high school career. But he is a scrawny, And he was in the college football playoff this year, and that would be kind of cool. And he fits exactly what they're looking for.
And he wasn't the center.
He wasn't the center.
That's what's important.
We'll talk more draft later.
We will.
Prime Eddie Lacy. This game has those terrible 2014 vibes, especially with the early field goals. So we have a smorgasbord of turning points. My personal pet peeve, Joe Barry's inability to take calculated risk on the last drive aside, tears second and long runs out of the blessed playbook. Seems like Matt LaFleur got nervous that the game was in his grasp, setting up the missed field goal.
Yes.
Kind of.
Yeah.
You shouldn't do that. Yeah, second and long runs are dumb. You should not do them. Agreed.
Bill Robbie says, please do not label them Super Bowl contenders. With a certain regression and a much more difficult schedule, 10 wins will be very difficult for 2024.
Nah.
That's probably true.
Well, they'll have a harder schedule, but I think the division will be pretty easy.
Well, the easy games are the ones that killed them this year. They lost to the Las Vegas Raiders and the Denver Broncos and the New York Giants.
The lesson we never learn every single year is that our preseason prognostications about a hard schedule are always wrong. Always, always, always.
Yeah. Yeah, there's just no wisdom there. It's ridiculous.
Yep.
Also for Bill Robbie, this is the last one. Can we find a way to get 18 inches on a quarterback sneak every time? With 2024 cap issues, does this team still get younger? There's a couple questions there. But,
okay, so the cap issues, the team will get very young when Bakhtiari leaves.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty sure he is this huge dead weight on the standard deviation.
Correct. He is. And it's quarterback sneak. They should stop doing the tush push. Like, the Eagles are good at that. Nobody else is good at it. Everybody else fails at it. And as it turns out, normal quarterback sneaks actually work really, really well a huge amount of the time. You can just do that. I will say this. I don't think Jordan's very good at those either. He seems to not get good push and often pick the wrong hole. And they might just be better lining up under center and giving it, giving it to Jones or some other back. They might be better off passing a lot of the time, honestly. But just a basic quarterback sneak is the best way to go most of the time for most teams. Just do that. Don't overthink this.
My hot take is that the Eagles won't be good at the tush push next year.
I don't think they will, because as Jason...
Kelsey's retiring.
Kelsey's retiring, right? I think he's kind of what makes that work more than
him and their ultra-strong quarterback.
Like, but without the center in front of the ultra-strong quarterback, like, that's not going to work.
Is there another center in the league who can snap the ball from a 4-point stance?
No.
Like, I don't think so. And that's what Kelsey does on the tush push. Yeah. Is he snaps out of a 4-point stance and takes like a old school zero tech dive at the zero tech.
Yep, but yeah, I think you're right. They'll be bad next year. So it should be, you don't need to do that. There's better ways to do it. It's fine.
Now, what they need to do is just find a converted tight end who happens to be the best center of all time and draft him.
Yeah, there you go. All right, we're done.
That's it. We're out.
We're good. We're done. All right. Woo. Before we go, JR, you want to plug anything?
Oh, man, I don't know. It's a crazy week all of a sudden. There's going to be more podcasts coming. The Green 19 podcast will be coming, looking at the off season. That's probably going to be maybe late this week, early next week. Point Forward podcast to talk about the Bucks firing head coach Adrian Griffin in the middle of a winning season. Wild times. That's coming soon. There's going to be a Microbrew podcast because the Brewers signed Rhys Hoskins.
Heck
so
yeah.
lots of me in your life. And then, which is fine. Obviously we'll be covering all these things at jsonline.com. So stay with us. We've got a lot to say.
All right. Matt, anything that you would like to plug?
Yeah, so last night I recorded on something that will drop the same day as this podcast, the Chasing Mac pod through the Tech Hockey Guide. I'm a Michigan Tech not alum, but I went there. and I was invited on specifically for the Bell Let's Talk episode. For folks who don't know, Bell Let's Talk is a Canadian thing where every time you use the hashtag on Bell Let's Talk Day, the company Bell will make a donation towards mental health.
Oh, okay.
And specifically, what put me on their radar was my new sign-off post.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The tragic passing of my best friend. So go listen. And if you are listening to this on Wednesday and you have a Twitter account, go use the hashtag Bell Let's Talk, because it's for a good cause.
Oh. Great. All right. As for me, we will definitely have a Milwaukee's Tailgate podcast next week, if not sooner, to because we signed Rhys Hoskins. So check that out. I actually will have a mini pod on Friday, a season wrap up statistical mini pod. We'll probably do a season wrap up podcast. We'll get to that when Paul is not on the road traveling randomly, which I am much of this week. We'll be back, of course, with that, with draft coverage when that rolls around, with the normal postseason cadence that we do keep here. Thank you all very much for listening. Thank you all to all of our patrons for patronizing, for all the great questions, for the words of thank you that a lot of you left. We really do appreciate it. We appreciate everybody who listens, but especially you guys who ask questions. So we'll leave it at that. Enjoy the, if you're still watching the games, enjoy those. Enjoy the Bucks. They might be good now. Woohoo. We'll be back, sporadically, definitely in future, because next season is going to rule. That'll do it for us. Enjoy football for the rest of the season.
The Book of Love has music in it. In fact, that's where music comes from. Some of it is just transcendental. Some of it is just really dumb. But I love it when you sing to me.
Claude 3 from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point of the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skill and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who use Anthropic to navigate this new frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude, C-L-A-U-D-E, today. Jumpstart your genius with Claude 3 by Anthropic.